We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
College Game Day is presented by Twin Peaks, home of the 29-degree man-sized drafts. Eats, drinks, scenic views. Twin Peaks. By Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got you covered. And by CBD American Shaman. Visit your local CBD American Shaman location and try free samples of pain-sacking CBD. CBD American Shaman. Life is better with the feather.
Okay, college football fans, your time is now. Sports Radio 810 WHB now presents College Game Day with Danny Klingscale and Stan Weber.
Good morning, Mid-America. It's another college football Saturday, and it is a big one. It's a rivalry Saturday all across the country. Some rivalries have already been played, but virtually every game you see in the top 25 is a rivalry game. We'll touch on rivalries in general. On the roundtable today, it is a pleasure on what likely is my last college football game day of the year to have Stan Weber right across from me in the studio, all decked out and ready to broadcast on the K-State Network later today, actually into the evening, as KU and K-State play another rivalry game, the Sunflower Showdown. Stan will be on the road at the very end of the show, but for the bulk of the proceedings, I get to look in at his lovely purple countenance here. His countenance isn't purple. That would be a person like W.C. Fields who drinks too much, and that's not Stan. But he has a purple jacket on, a purple tie, and a purple hinted shirt as well, all ready for the K-State broadcast. And it does mean something, the Sunflower Showdown, tangibly, as far as the Big 12 race is concerned now after the win by Texas yesterday. There's all kinds of things to talk about. We've got games have been played, rivalries to come, big-time showdowns that have playoff implications. And Stan and I, and eventually Todd Lebo, will be breaking it down the entire show. Just us talking college football today, how appropriate that is. But this day at the start, Stan, after football on Friday, does belong to the Missouri Tigers. What a win for the Tigers. They deserve all credit for a game that looked like it was going to slip away again. They'd been 1-4 in one-score games this season. That had been the difference between what would have been a very successful season and a season that was very much in peril. Now they are bowl eligible. They have the opportunity for Eli Drinkwitz to actually, with a bowl win, get to the 500 mark. Their quarterback was gallant. Their defense, which really wasn't very good the whole day, but at the end was outstanding. It was a great day for Missouri. A lot of pressure off a lot of people. An exhale probably as much as an exaltation, Stan. But really exciting game for Tiger fans, and they are headed to a bowl game.
So much at stake. Wow. If they would have lost, what would we be thinking today? That's what you got to remember, because you know, if you're a KU fan or saying, hey, we're going to end with the same record as Missouri did, K-State beat Missouri head-to-head, if you want to go down that path and say, that wasn't that great a year, just think what you'd be saying today if Missouri would have lost to Arkansas again, finished 5-7, and it would have been just a disastrous year for the Missouri Tigers. Instead, I think you can focus in on the last half of the season. That win over Arkansas was significant. Now, Arkansas loses a lot of close games as well, but they were coming off a great game that they played last week. They come into town, and Missouri shuts down a guy who's running like crazy, just makes him a non-factor in the running game. That's what Missouri's good at. They delivered on that. Brady Cook played one of his better games, scrambling all over the field, setting the tone, scoring first. And I thought Missouri was the better team against Arkansas. Now, they almost blew it, and you had to be nervous. If you're a Missouri fan, like, no, this can't happen again. Arkansas always finds a way against us. But, no, they were good, so good on defense that Arkansas chose, you know, unlike the modern coaches or the analytics people would say, they kicked a field goal down inside the 5-yard line and said, we'll be back to kick a field goal later, and they never got there. But Missouri just said, put up such a wall. They'd run three plays down there against Missouri at the goal line, couldn't get anywhere. Why try a fourth? The analytics say the fourth gives you that's You know, one more play compared to three, that's a 33% bigger
field,
chance.
Field position, your defense did stop them time after time. So, very interesting finish to the game. But one of the
Missouri beat Arkansas the last half of the season. They beat South Carolina. Now, these are two teams that have played at a high level. And think what South Carolina just did against Tennessee. I mean, it was amazing how they did that, and they did it at home. They're a better team at home. Missouri was able to go there, control the game. So there are a lot of positives. You can take a look at this season, and I think, you know, Brady Cook deserves a little bit more praise. Missouri fans seem to be the last ones to pat him on the back. But now you get to work, get ready, and if you're looking for the younger players, Danny, like Missouri Tiger fans are, this 15 days of extra practice and getting a chance to go to the bowl game are very, very big. You know, maybe Sam Horn will develop. But Brady Cook stepped up. I've said it all year long, Dominic Lovett at a wide receiver, but Luther Burton's getting better. You know, he's no longer a rookie, so he's going to be a better player. Good win for Missouri, big-time win, but the difference between winning and losing is the story. If they would have dumped that game to Arkansas and added to the type of pain they took throughout the year and finished 5-7, they wouldn't even want to be talking about college football today. Now, we'll be talking about them all the way through the rest of December. So, congratulations, Missouri. Back to the wall, big-time win.
Especially in the first part of the game, Brady Cook was really outstanding. Now, he's still a somewhat indifferent thrower of the football. I mean, he's not precise, and he misses some throws he probably should hit, which probably in the offseason creates a scenario of wondering where the quarterback position is at, where Sam Horn is at. But I think we can see that with Brady Cook, who struggled throughout much of the season, until the last few games when he absolutely stepped forward and played well, that he only got a couple of snaps, did Sam Horn, which would indicate to anybody who isn't listening because nobody's talking, is the fact that he isn't ready, apparently, to come in and even take some snaps or take a series or whatever. And so his development apparently hasn't been fantastic. But for the here and now, Brady Cook, headed into a bowl game, has done the job. And I can't say, I can say, viewing a football game, that he should make a few better throws. But as far as toughness and leadership, he has been voted a captain by his teammates. As far as being a runner, he is just tough and fast and physical. I mean, he's an outstanding runner. And, you know, that aspect of the game in college football is so important. And Missouri is a weird offensive team, Stan, because they look ultra dangerous at times, and then they just go into these funks like they did in the second half where they can't do anything.
Yeah, it's up and down. It's a roller coaster. It's not a perfect offense, but I think you need to credit the wide receiving core.
Yes.
It's improving throughout the year. Love it again with 130 yards. I think he has a chance to be all SEC, big-time receiver. But Luther Burton has now grown into a role of being more complimentary. Everyone advanced him, in my opinion, way too fast to the front of the line. But Chance Looper is out there. Mookie Cooper. Those guys made some good catches. And yeah. I'm just
they
not
pretty
as...
much, let me ask you about this tactically. This is something that a coach has to adjust to and realize that this is, you know, this is what his team is. It seemed that eventually Eli Drinkwitz figured out that I've got good receivers out there who actually can go downfield and catch the ball. That's not Luther's game right now. They pretty much just throw screens to him. And he's a fine runner. He scored yesterday. And so that's what they turn to make him a weapon. Instead of trying to consistently force the ball downfield to him where he dropped the ball a lot and that hurts his confidence, use him the way he's most effective.
Yes, and I think that they all need to accept that, but it's hard. Boy, they built him up at the beginning of the year so much. You know, he ends the year averaging about 9 yards per completion. Okay, normal, if you want to know what the stats lie, they're about 11.5. 11.5's a normal wide receiver. For instance, Missouri going into the game was at 11.3 yards per completion. So that was about average, but he was at 8.3, probably up that a little bit. He's not refined as a wide receiver, but it's not easy. I'm telling you, to have the coverages that you do, to run the speed you have to and the body control you have to track the balls that are thrown so much harder, so much quicker when you turn around the balls in your face, that takes time. Even if you're going to be a great receiver, I'm not down on Luther Burton being an NFL star. He could be an NFL star, Danny. I'm just saying, when you're a freshman, it is hard. And they started trying to feature him at the beginning of the year,
mm-hmm.
rather than waiting, you know, for him to develop, because they had another guy who was a star, Dominic Lovett. Lovett for the year averages 14 and a half yards per completion. You know, he's got 800 and some yards receiving and did a great job this year. Missouri's receiving corps coming around. Now, just back to Brady Cook. Unlike a lot of people, I'm not nearly as down on him as everyone else is. You know, he completed 66% of his passes this year. He didn't throw the ball downfield enough, but he was barely off on those throws. He was not the reason that Missouri was held back. Everyone acts like if they just had a better quarterback, it would be easy. Well, yeah, sure. If you have a great quarterback, it does advance you from a 6-6 team to an 8-4 team. I get that. But Brady Cook is so much further along than Sam Horn because it makes all the sense in the world. Sam Horn may be really good next year or the year after, but I think he's going to have trouble beating out Brady Cook because Brady's going to get better during the offseason. And he had a gutsy performance yesterday. That game was up in the air. Going into it, didn't you think Arkansas had the advantage? I mean, the way that they played last week was so impressive, dominating Ole Miss the way they did. They come in, they got a running back, Raheem Sanders, who's trying to win the SEC rushing title, scooting along at 1,400 yards, Danny, for the season, averaging 6.6 yards a carry, and they just stuff him. But Brady Cook's the guy who said, I'm going to help Missouri get over the hump, get the lead, and Missouri played in front the whole time. Yet to be determined how good Brady Cook will be, but I guess I'm just not quite as down on him, and I definitely am not surprised that Sam Horn didn't just come in and beat him out. It is very, very hard. Look at Quinn Ewers. Look at the Texas team he has around him and all the hype he has, and he's a redshirt freshman for Texas, Danny. They end up the season where they still have an outside chance to make the Big 12 championship game next week, and they do it in spite of him. He doesn't do much for Texas at all, and he's got all the intangibles and grew up playing at the right places in Texas and five-star and all that kind of stuff, and he's struggling. It's not easy. So Sam Horn, you know, I'm waiting to see where his development is. I'm not down on the fact that he's not down out on the field yet, but let's see what Brady Cook does in the – let's see if he can convince a few people in the bowl game. He needs to put it back-to-back, right, to get people on board. But Missouri ends the year – and they did it. They were under a lot of stress mid-year. I didn't think we'd be here. I did not think Missouri was going to get to 6-6.
I didn't either. And they did, and that's to their credit. And we mentioned the end of the game. End of the game's been a disaster for Missouri. In this case, offensively, they don't really handle it that well. They could have put the game away with a four-minute drive or whatever, and they didn't. And they handed it to their defense, who'd been indifferent most of the day. Although, you know, by today's modern football standards, Arkansas is capable of going for 50. There's no question about that. And they had somewhat held them down. But then they hold them to a field goal, as mentioned, in the last three key series. The last one doesn't matter because there are 14 seconds left, and Missouri had pretty much salted the game away. They get a pass interference penalty in the end zone, so it's first and goal at the 2. And they
first
and goal at the 2, and they hold him out and
drive him backwards to the 4.
Yeah, and they and modern football to me is, you know, there you kick the field. I get that you kick. You know, maybe you know they got him to the 2. You kick that field goal, but they did it twice. They did it earlier too, and I guess. For Arkansas fans, they're probably saying if we had a young and vibrant, innovative coach instead of Sam Pittman, who's done a fine job, he would have gone for that. We would have scored a touchdown. Well, in the end, that's why we have these discussions, because they do kick the field goal. He's counting on his defense to get the ball back. They do it. They do it twice. And then Missouri doesn't allow anything. And both times when they get the ball, you're like, well, all they need is a field goal. They're going to drive down and get a field goal, and then it's going to be up to Missouri to try to win the game, and they don't. So there are a lot of things at play, from analytics to Missouri showing toughness defensively. Their defensive front has been a strength all year long. They leaned on that. They got, I think, 6 sacks in the game today. So it was just a breath of fresh air for Missouri to watch the final parts of the game play out in emotional fashion, with their offense, you know, unable to put the game away, but eventually getting a first down, and their defense being stout.
Now, being fair, on the other side, because I'm a little bit too positive, I just thought it was such a giant win for Missouri, and beating South Carolina and getting to bowl eligibility, I'm all positive about Missouri today and Brady Cook. You know, you do have to state, 29 points is the most points they've scored against a Power 5 team. And looking at the data that I'm looking at all the time, I cannot tell you how many times I'm writing down the average score by teams is 30 points. That's just something that's happening all the time, Danny. Almost every team that's good in the country is sitting there with 30-plus points a game, and then it goes on up from there for the elite, unbelievable Tennessee-type offenses. But everyone's hovering around 30, and Missouri's most against the Power 5 is 29. So obviously there's some issues still. You could be better on the offensive side than Brady Cook scrambling and that type of thing. But, you know, what's fun about this game is I think the analytics argument is really going to be hot and heavy. And it shouldn't be just one-sided. In my world, it's more fair. There's decisions to be made. But this time I can, and I'm not against the analytics at all, but this time I think that they could put a little more pressure on because they kicked the field goal the first time, settled, you know, early in the fourth quarter. He kicked the field goal. I have no problem with that.
Late in the third quarter, but yeah.
Okay, late in the third. Plenty of time left, settled for a field goal. Analytics would say, no, you got to go. But when they got down to the two-yard line first and goal, and didn't score a touchdown and never got back to try another field goal, I have all, you know, I can see where the criticism rains down on Arkansas today because you just got to get in from the two. And if it takes four downs, you just got to get in from the two to go ahead.
And they didn't back up. I agree. I would have gone for it. I see what Sam Pittman is thinking. Although in the counter argument is, you really thought you were going to stop Missouri? No, they did, but you know that's the other part of it. You know, scoring touchdowns is important there, but also play calling to me. I'm no savant or anything, but first of all, I understand box leverage and all that stuff. But if I'm playing defense in the NFL, for instance, and it's 2nd and 10. They're going to run the ball. I mean, if I'm a safety,
2nd and long, you run.
and it's light in the box. But if I'm a safety, okay, I'm going to be back there in 12 yards or something. But before the snap, I'm just barreling up there. You know, whatever. They're not going to throw it over my head. And then
you'd be the Troy Polamalu, who was a Pittsburgh safety. Just for those who don't know, who just said, I don't care what the coach called. Yeah. I'm going to go do this
because they're running.
And he got to do it. Troy Polamalu is the Danny Klinkskill of football.
But the other, more to this point, when they didn't, they quarterback sneaked on 2nd down. And
with a non-quarterback.
With a non-quarterback.
What was that?
And so then I know they're throwing on 3rd down. Now, it was a rollout play. There are some options there. But I'm running. This is a team with good backs and a big strong quarterback. Yeah,
Jefferson quarterback or Sanders running back. Do it. Go 2 times.
Yeah. And if you don't make it on 3rd and goal and you sneak with him or do whatever, you probably are going to get something. And then it's, 4th and a foot or 4th and whatever. So to me, throwing the football was. They blow up the run and it's 4th and goal at the 4. Fine. Kick the field goal then. But darn it. Show your toughness. Show what you're going to do. Don't think that Missouri's going to be tricked. There's not much room there with the end zone behind you.
I was surprised Arkansas didn't lean on their strength.
Yeah.
I mean, to have a wide receiver or big tight end come in and take a quarterback sneak like they're trying to protect Patrick Mahomes or something, that's what the Chiefs do, when they bring in Blake Bell, the bulldozer, and say, Patrick, we don't need you to be quarterbacking. And it's supposed to be tricky.
But take it to Kelsey or something like that.
Yeah, he comes in and it wasn't like he got there real fast to trick Missouri, and they just stuffed him. I mean, he made 0 yards on that play. Yeah, but it worked out very well for Missouri.
Yes.
They put stress on Arkansas, and they got the job done. They won the game, and what a breath of fresh air. I mean, one of the bad things about playing on Thanksgiving Day or the Friday after Thanksgiving, which is a great traditional day for football, is if you lose, it just blows the whole weekend. It's the end of the year. This game's going to linger with you. You're going to have to think about it. Even if you go to a bowl game, you got 3 weeks, 4 weeks to think about it. The last thing you want to do is get fired up for a Saturday in football. But now, when you win the game, hay's in the barn. You're looking around. Maybe you watch one of your opponents. You root against some hated rivals. And you have some of those things occur. But today, it's interesting. You told a little personal story, and I know we don't want to go too deep into your travels because you had some. I mean, I went to the Cayman Islands. At least I can match you a little bit. I just got back in town, so But I know you've been traveling a lot, and you've got this is your last show for sure, even if we do a show next week, because you got some more travels to the East Coast, get to go see some family and and all of that. But, you know, what's interesting is trying to focus one game at a time like the team does and then plan your personal life when you love teams is really a big deal. And K-State fans are feeling it right now because they're trying to decide between the big game against KU, which is always respected. It's at home. You only get a home game every other year. It's a night game, perfect time for K-State fans to party all day. But in the back of their mind, they're saying, do I set my plans to go to Dallas next week, or am I jinxing my team? What am I going to do? How do you balance all of this? Because you have to plan ahead, Danny. You've got to make choices. And you've got a friend that's a big Iowa fan who said, well, at least I know we're going to beat Nebraska the Friday after Thanksgiving.
And he lives in Boston, and we're supposed to get together, so we're trying to figure out the logistics of when we're going to visit with each other. He's my best friend from high school. We very seldom see each other. In fact, we haven't had much contact through the years. But when I last spoke with him, or we connected by email, he's like, well, when they beat Nebraska,
we're
going to go to Indianapolis because he has some coaching connections from the past that and he's an Iowa fan. So
all Iowa has to do is beat Nebraska. Okay. And then he's only won three games.
And then he's
and they are in the Big Ten championship game next week.
And then he's going to the game, and so we got to meet earlier in the week, whatever. So that I turn on the TV and start watching the Missouri game or get set for the Missouri game, and I'm watching the soccer game, whatever. And it's 17-0. Nebraska at the half. Now, Nebraska almost blew it, but Iowa did not come back and win.
They got ahead 24-0 before Iowa started coming back.
Yeah. So anyway, by the way, I was listening to the Iowa broadcast at the end, and it's so much fun sometimes to listen to the veteran color guy, and Ed Podolak is the color man for Iowa. And they had made some call, and he hated it. And he goes, oh, why don't we just play flag football now? I was called for, I think, leaping at the line of scrimmage on a...
The punt wall. They build a wall with three players. You cannot jump and leap over the wall.
Right. So
they
didn't like that call, and Ed sounded like a 100-year-old old man. He goes, why don't we just play flag football? Anyway, so that little detour there. But
or follow the rules.
It just shows what can happen in football. And yesterday... We see it that Texas wins the game. Maybe K-State was like, you know, the game was close all through. I'm sure probably a lot of them watched it. Did they want Texas to win and then they could exhale? Like you say, there's a lot of dynamics that are involved, and we'll see it all across the country today, and we'll talk about that as we move along. There's scenarios for people to make bowl games.
Like a Purdue fan today.
Right.
Purdue fans.
So the Iowa
Purdue
scenario, fans, for anybody who cares, Iowa does have some small chance.
Iowa had it in the bag yesterday. Yeah. All they had to do was win. So Purdue fans are like, oh, darn it. And then when Iowa loses, how many Purdue fans are going, I think we're going to win today. I better make my plans.
Yeah, they're playing Indiana, so they're supposed to win. So then if they lose, then Illinois can win. But Iowa still can root for those two teams to lose. We've seen in the NFL, we saw the Chiefs about, 2009 or something, they made the playoffs because 11 different things happened on the last day of the year. Maybe it was a little earlier.
I just think it's funny, that the plans for the fans, though.
Yes.
I mean, what does Purdue fan do today, this morning? Like, well, before I load in for my game, I'm going to check on hotel rooms availability and all this kind of stuff. And you're going, well, should I do it? Well, we got to get going, because if we don't get it planned, the game's next week.
Purdue fans can probably just drive to Indianapolis. So that's the advantage that they have.
But I'm talking about hotel rooms, tickets.
Sure. Yeah.
All this kind of but it's so funny because you're the one who brought it up as soon as I saw you this morning. It's like you have a friend who's an Iowa fan on the East Coast, setting his plans up based upon going to the Big Ten championship game next Saturday, which is very logical and fair. And I wonder if he's just sitting himself going, I just jinxed my team, cannot do it.
Yeah, I don't even know. Maybe he might have bought tickets. He's got to fly. They got to fly.
Well,
so.
I know it's all true because K-State fans are living it right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much do you say, I've got a plan. I mean, I've got jobs. We've got to take vacation. We've got to get our hotel rooms. We got to get our flights, our schedules, our tickets. And then you say, but what happens if your team doesn't win?
Right.
You know, am I jinxing my team?
Especially because K-State, and we're going to go deep into the Sunflower Showdown in our next segment, but especially because you're really supposed to win. I mean, this is Iowa at home against Nebraska yesterday, maybe times two, I would say. So anyway, really fascinating, but this segment wanted
the Huskers
to really
3-8.
Yeah. Wanted to devote it to the Missouri Tigers who deserve
Congratulations,
it.
Missouri. Yeah. We got to continue to talk about you in December.
I feel good for the fans and I feel good for the players. I'm not still sure I'm, you know, all on board because of contract extensions that get extended to coaches who are under 500 and all that's, you know, seems like Eli Drinkwitz still is in the category of being a little entitled at this point in time. Now, he may earn my respect eventually, but we'll see. But I feel great for the Tiger fans who've really had just an awful season as far as the angst is concerned. But to close out this segment about Missouri, still, I think as they head to the bowl game, and they'll be soaking up this win today and enjoying it, I still think there's a lot of people who are going to talk about how the bowl game is going to be structured. Do we just go out there and try to win the bowl game, okay, which to me is important for Eli Drinkwitz. He would still conclude the season as a losing coach if they lost the bowl game. They would have a losing record this year. So I think there's a lot on the line from a win-loss standpoint, but are there fans out there, and I think there still are, hey, we got to see some guys. We got to see Sam Horn in this game. You know, this is our opportunity. He's got 3 weeks to practice or whatever it is. We need to look to the future, even though Brady Cook played good football. That's a conundrum for the coaching staff, too.
It is. And
to me, I just go win the game. But
that's the
me.
Simplest thing ever. The only way you build your program is win this game. You don't play that many times. So the best thing for Sam Horn is whatever it takes to win. And you, because, like you said, it's, hey, compared to losing to Arkansas and being 5-7, the bowl game still is a important win for Missouri because the difference between 7-6, winning your last two games, winning a game like that that's going to be against a legitimate opponent in conference play, this is a big win. This is a big game coming up for Missouri. There's no doubt about it. You don't ever like when you go, but we were 6-7. But we were 6-7. Hey, we went to a bowl game, but people, you know, your record was 6-7, right. And you're in the SEC. You're supposed to win these games. So today's the day to be positive. You're right. As we get closer to the bowl game, we'll start talking about Missouri needing to win it. But I tell you what, it's the simplest answer ever, Danny. The best thing for the youngsters and recruiting, win the bowl game. Put on a show at that point, and no one will care how your youngsters developed. That's where those 15 days of practice. Not for public viewing, Danny.
That is a good point. Let's talk Sunflower Showdown. Will it be one, or will it just be a coronation of Kansas State headed to Arlington for the first time for a Big 12 championship game there? That on College Football Game Day, straight ahead on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to College Football Game Day. Stan Weber there, Danny Klinkscale here. Of course, we've been doing this forever, and right now I do this, and I do a segment with Seren, and I do a whole bunch of other stuff at DannyKlinkscale.com and the Reasonably Irreverent podcast, so you can check in there anytime. Pay attention to my social media, and you'll see all the variety of things that I do, from personality profiles to music and films and all kinds of other stuff. But on Saturdays, it's college football. And also, Stan and I do a podcast together on Mondays in the football season. So you can always pay attention to that. Those are deep, deep dives. You get a lot of information from Stan, but we talk about the Chiefs and college football weekend. I don't think we're going to have to really dive too deep into the Chiefs game on Monday, Stan.
Look at you making a prediction.
I'm definitely making a prediction.
But on this Saturday, we don't dive into the Chiefs very far.
No,
so we'll mention
at all.
Mahomes once in a while or something like that. But go to the podcast if you want to hear about Danny and me speaking about the Chiefs.
Yeah, there you go. And college football.
And NFL
football. All
they get to hear us here with college.
Yes,
though,
and college. Today, I'm sort of making a prediction in my introductory comments to you as well. I don't see drama tonight in Manhattan. The weather's decent now. Looks like it's going to be kind of a crappy night, to be honest. Some showers are going to move in, and it's going to drop into the 40s, so it probably will. During the tailgating, it looks like it might be pretty decent, but then as the game starts, it's going to start to rain. It probably won't be much of an environment, but we'll, as far as the weather is concerned. And as far as the ball game is concerned, We'll have to wait and see. These two teams are trending in completely different directions, Stan. This game was played in week six, week seven, which for a few years it was. They moved it away from the end of the year. There probably would be a lot more tangible excitement as far as just how what it means football-wise. I'm not going to diminish it. Kansas State obviously needs to win the game, and an upset by Kansas would certainly be one of the, this is not hyperbole, one of the greatest wins in the history of the program to deny their state rival the opportunity to play in the title game and to ensure a winning record. But I don't see it. Teams are going in opposite directions. K-State couldn't be humming further along with Will Howard at quarterback. They've averaged over 40 points a game. With him playing in a game, they've averaged 39. And Kansas has had injuries. Their defense, which bubbled up for a little bit, has degenerated. There's questions as far as health at the quarterback position. Doesn't look like a good prescription, but they're going to play at 7 o'clock, and that means anything can happen.
Well, how do you want me to take this, Danny? I could go, you know, so many different directions.
I can. The way I'm taking it is I think that K-State's going to win the game easily. That's me. But anyway.
Well, K-State's good. There's no doubt about it. And on offense, they have a lot of answers. Their offensive line has come together after an early season injury. They have stuck together, the five players. They play every down together. And they've done a good job. K-State is indifferent if they run or throw. They can really attack you in both ways very equally. They're averaging 208 yards rushing the football this year is K-State. A pretty strong little rushing performance, Danny. Oh, they average 211 yards passing the football. That's pretty darn close. They're rushing at a 5.2 yard average per run. Let's put that in perspective. K-State's all-time record average running yards per play, 5.3. They're tapping on a K-State all-time record for being able to rush the football. And yet they're very proficient in the passing game. They're best in the Big 12 and fourth best in the country, Danny, in turnover margin. They protect the football. They get interceptions better than anybody in the Big 12. They've got 15 interceptions this year. They're plus 13 in turnover margins. And they are a team that believes, they're focused, they're taking it one game at a time. There's a lot of good things to talk about, and I think they got the best player in the conference in Deuce Vaughn. He may not be the first running back drafted, but he's the weapon that teams have to worry about because he will hurt you in a passing game just as much as he will in the running game. He's a good blocker when the blitz pickup needs to occur. He just does everything right for K-State, and they also are starting to get a little bit of performance as well and a little help. If they want to have a bigger back in the ball game, they just go to DJ Giddens. He had a big run against West Virginia for a touchdown. He actually had more rushing yards in the last game than Deuce Vaughn. So K-State's got a lot of things going for them. Think about Malik Knowles. He's been an elite kick returner. He's been a starter at wide receiver with Phillip Brooks for a long, long time. But against West Virginia, he put on a show, Danny. Six receptions. His six receptions came on six targets. There was interference called one of the times he caught it. It was a third down and short on another one where he caught it. He ran after the catch like he was a kick returner. He is playing at a big-time level. So, yes, K-State is good, and the strength of the team might not be the offense. It might be the defense. Now, for K-State fans talking about injuries, they've had 2 weeks in a row
right,
where, unfortunately, they've lost a guy. Kobe Savage did a very nice job for the Wildcats, got hurt against Baylor after he made an interception. So getting his first start of his career, Sincere Mason came in, and on the third play of his starting term, he picked six, 37-yard interception return against West Virginia. And, unfortunately, he got hurt also. I wonder if K-State defenders like knock the ball down tonight. If there's any interception opportunities, like, no, I don't want that interception. What comes with it? But they are down two safeties, and K-State plays three safeties, as you know, Danny. So you got Josh Hayes, Drake Cheatham. They like to rotate the guys through tonight for K-State. Those two guys have to stay out in the field as much as they possibly can. And then they probably got to look to V.J. Payne, a freshman, a true freshman to step in. T.J. Smith, a veteran player, could be in the rotation as well. They may have to go a little deeper than that if something happens. But the secondary for the Wildcats is a question mark right now. Otherwise, the team is pretty healthy. Deuce Vaughn, for instance, for the Wildcats, is healthier than he was 4 weeks ago. He's actually got beat up a little bit in the middle of the year, and it's bounced back. So I have no problem with you saying that K-State is a good football team. They're at home. They care about this game, and they're going to try to get their 14th straight win against Kansas, their 7th straight win against Kansas at home. All those things are in play. The Wildcats had a very good year, second place in the Big 12. No matter what happens tonight, second place in the Big 12, that's the best they've finished since the 2012 championship. And if K-State wins, you're right, Danny, they will play in their fourth Big 12 championship game if they get that done. The first one ever in Cowboys AT&T Stadium. They played in Kansas City in 2000 and 2003, got that championship in 2003. They played in 1998 with that undefeated number one team and lost in St. Louis to Texas A&M. They did not play in a Big 12 championship game in 2012.
Right, there
so you don't get
one.
It. They
right.
won a championship, but they don't get the opportunity to say they won. But this, a chance to win seven conference games, chance to win nine, all those things are in play. But this isn't a walkover. I can give you some positives about the University of Kansas as well.
Just a quick note, and we'll talk about this in our upcoming segment. Matt Rhule has been named the head coach of Nebraska. So he was just on College Game Day, and you talk about somebody being resuscitated after, you know, just like Nick Saban, excel in college, go to the NFL, stink, come back, maybe excel in the college football. We'll see if Nebraska does. We'll talk about that later.
Solid hire there.
Yeah, I would say so.
But let's look at Kansas.
Yes, let's look at Kansas. Just a fireball early in the season and with Jalen Daniels. And then the rest of the season, they've only won one game. They've shown fight in most of their losses. That didn't happen against Texas. That's another reason why I guess I'm a little bit negative about today's game and then moving on to what I think is a very important bowl game for them too. But yes, still dangerous. We've seen all the dangerous things they can do, Stan, and there are positives there. And there certainly is a prescription. I mean, Kansas State is only, 12-point favorite, something like that. So they've done so many good things. They can sort of look at that and say, hey, this is a big day for us. We can shock the world.
Yes, and they play with confidence all year long. Now, the thing that you mentioned is what happens after the Texas game. I don't know. It's pretty late in the year. They got their win to get to a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
Is their confidence shaken at all? That has not been. Lance Leipold has done a great job of impounding what every coach is going to continue to fight, no matter if they're a good or bad coach. I mean, that's easy. But can you get your players to believe? Lance Leipold, he did that. For the first 10 games, no matter if Kansas was behind early in a game, they came back and fought later. Every game. Baylor, they're on the road. Baylor's picked to win this conference, Danny, and they just smashed KU in the mouth in the first quarter was all Baylor, and yet Kansas came back and fought. It has been a non-factor about what the score is, what your record is, or what your confidence level mm-hmm. should be. Lance Leipold has had this team just on a rail going all year until the Texas game. And then they're behind 31-0. And there's that kind of look like, what are we going to do? And then Jalen Daniel is back, but how is he playing? Rusty. So here's the big thing. Did Jalen Daniels bust the rust off last week to be back to his normal self this week? And you know I've talked about having injuries and missing a little bit of time in the middle of the season. I think that does happen. I think your first week back is like, what the heck? And then you're back to normal. There's a chance Jalen Daniels could be back full flight as good as he was earlier in the year. That's Kansas's hope. If he is not, for any reason, Jason Bean a few weeks ago was playing lights out. Then he got beat up a little bit. Both those quarterbacks can play at a high level, and if they do, that's their chance. Those quarterbacks have to play great. They have to play great today. But if they do, they have a chance. Devin Neal's a 1,000-yard running back. He's not the only back. They can mix guys in, but he's a 1,000-yard running back. The receiving corps is probably as big a surprise as any part of this Kansas team. They've made plays.
Yes.
50-50 balls. They're pulling them down all year long.
Their tight ends are good.
Deep throws. Mason Fairchild's. Jared Casey's not only famous for the Texas game anymore. The design of the offense, Colton Nicky, he has done an amazing job drawing up plays for Kansas. It's all about the offense. Defense, obviously just no great players. They're okay. They're not awful anywhere. You know, Sam Burt from Abilene, Kansas, unfortunately got hurt against against Texas. I don't know if he's going to be available. But last year he fought back, and the only game he played again was against K-State. He wants a piece of K-State. Lance Leipold even talked about that. He comes in and says, I want to be out there. I want to lead this team. But the fact is, there are no standouts on the defensive side. When you start saying, well, who's the best player? I go, well, Kobe Bryant, the cornerback's pretty good. Kenny Logan had a ton of tackles last year, 113. He's an excitable player, but when things go well, he gets really good. when things don't go so well, he can't turn it around. Does that, he's kind of an emotional guy. Like if you need, if everything's going well, he'll knock your head off. If things aren't going well, he'll be Tyrann Mathieu the last year with the Chiefs. Like, darn, I missed you. And there goes another Texas running back for a touchdown. You remember that, Danny? You were telling me, like, these no-names, not Bijan Robinson, who ran for, what, 234 against Kansas and didn't even play hardly in the third quarter. So Kansas, will their confidence be broken? Can it be? K-State's offense could do it. K-State can win a shootout game. They can win a 10-9 game against Iowa State. K-State's really good. But Kansas can be dangerous. They can win a shootout game if Jalen Daniels plays to his best level or if Jason Bean does it. Let me give you an example, Danny. K-State in 1998 had the best offense that K-State has ever had in their history. They averaged 478 yards. This is Michael Bishop, right? 1998. The average per play, and we got to talk about average per play, not total yards. In the NFL, Danny, when we talk on Mondays on the podcast, we can talk about total yards. Because the yards per play and the total yards are right in the same ballpark because NFL teams run about the same number of plays. They all play with the same style, generally, right? In college, teams snap the ball at all different paces. Tennessee snapping the ball as fast as you can. Texas Tech can. I've got to get away from total yards a little bit and look at yards per play. Does that make sense? So K-State, 478 yards was the best performance. But the average per play for K-State was 6.5. 6.5 yards per play is the best in K-State history. Okay? Think about 6.5. Kansas's best per play in their history is 6.4. 1950. Danny, I don't know. If you know about that 1950 team, fill something in for me about that.
People may be surprised I was far from being around then.
Okay. You know, that's not it's not John Hadle. It's not John Riggins.
No.
It's not Gale Sayers. Before my time.
I don't even know who
so,
it is.
So K-State and KU's greatest yards per play in the history of their offenses is about 6.5, right? Pretty easy to remember. It's hard on radio to do stats, okay? But just remember 6.5. Kansas, through 11 games, is averaging 7.2 yards per play. Best in the Big 12, fourth best in the nation. That's a dangerous offense. Because you know the tenths even matter. 6.5 is better than 6.4, play after play after play. And you and I have been talking about it all year. Kansas is ninth best in the country, best in the Big 12 on third down, 50% third down conversion rate. If they convert on third down, it's not outrageous that they can do it against defense.
I will point out, they were humming along at 65, 66 right. through much of the season.
So they put some 40% in there. Right. But still, for
still,
a whole year.
Oh, very good.
If Kansas converts on third down, you shouldn't be surprised. If they convert near a 50% rate, they keep K-State's offense off the field. They don't have to put, oh, by the way, their punt team on the field because Kansas doesn't want to put their punt team or their field goal team.
They switched both kickers during the course of last week's game. Yeah, I mean, the special teams advantage for Kansas State in this game is like exponential.
Right, but do you know how many times Kansas has basically punted this year with their punters? Not like a quarterback just kicking a quick kick. You know how many times Kansas punted this whole year? 11 games. Give me a number.
14.
14 times in 11 games?
That sounds right to me.
That they only punt once a game?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, Danny. You blew my stuff. Yeah. 30 times.
Oh, that's low.
That's low. So they convert on third down. They hardly ever punt. If they punt, it's a big advantage for K-State, right? But they hardly ever punt. They average 7.2 yards a play. Can you make a case that Kansas can score? They average 32-plus points a game.
You can definitely make that case.
You can definitely make that case.
For sure.
So the quarterback plays great. They are able to convert on third down. They move the ball. They score touchdowns. And they score TDs 71% of the time they get in a red zone. That is really good. For instance, K-State scores touchdowns 56% of the times when they get in the red zone. You can make a case that Kansas' offense gets going. And if we end the third quarter and Kansas is in the game and it's raining, what do you think the nervous level is going to be
exactly
for Wildcat fans? And which might affect the players. So is there a scenario that Kansas is dangerous in this game? Yes, but they got to play great offense, relying on their quarterback tremendously, convert on third down, and then still hope that they can make winning plays at the end of the ball game and create a situation where they're nervous. Could K-State separate and dominate and put a little Texas on them? Absolutely.
Yeah, the start of this game to me is so important. I probably oversay that. You know, in any game, the start of the game is important. But in modern football, a lot of times getting down 14 to nothing, as Kansas showed early in the season, is no big deal. But in this game, let's face it, what we saw last week is K-State, 28 points for the offense. They scored 35 points in the first quarter, basically a quarter plus. I mean, that's in play for me against Kansas today. That's how the Kansas defense has, you know, looked the last couple of weeks against Tech, against Texas. It's looked like that.
And a lot of people talk about the importance of this game, and it hasn't been with great importance that much. Okay, the rivalry has been K-State winning in football, KU winning in basketball. I get all that. And to point out what you're saying, how it can separate and blow up in the face of a KU day that could be special. A lot of people look back and say, hey, 1995, when these two teams got after it, Kansas was ranked number 6 in the country. K-State was ranked number 14 in the country in 95. K-State had won the 91, the 93, and the 94 game, but Glenn Mason had won the 89 game against Bill Snyder, the 90 game, and the 92 game. So they were basically 50-50 against each other head-to-head, and Kansas comes in ranked number 6 in the country. And K-State beat them 41-7. And that was the separation point. From that point, K-State shot off and became great at football, and Kansas fell apart, and in most ways, we're not at all in the same league. It happened on that day. So could that happen today where Kansas says, you know, here we go, and suddenly the offense doesn't function at a high level, or the K-State defense is just better? The quarterbacks aren't on fire, but the K-State offense is, and then Kansas just goes, we're beaten down, man. It's been a long year. This is an ugly day. That rain suddenly bears down on their soul.
Right. It's cold.
So, you know, you could see K-State celebrating and separating. That is in play. But K-State needs to get to work because Nebraska beat Iowa yesterday.
Exactly.
At Iowa.
Exactly.
And you better be careful about these games. So the K-State fans, I think their focus will be level.
Isn't that the type of thing that a coach would bring up? Or do you not want to put a negative thought in your team's mind?
No, and the other thing about K-State right now is Chris Klieman has really got his team where he wants them, just like Lance Leipold has had his. It's all looking internal, and it's all about nothing's going to affect us up or down. Win or lose, we're going to be fine. Let's just take care of today, and that's allowed them to bounce back from those tough losses. Tulane, you know, what a punch in the gut that was. People thought, oh, what the heck, what are they going to do? How can Adrian Martinez ever play well? Then they go beat Oklahoma in a showdown, and he put lights up the scoreboard, runs and throws, had 4 rushing touchdowns. So K-State is really, really locked in to where they want to be. You don't throw any curveballs out there about normal life. Listening to people like us, they just wouldn't have the radios on. They're not listening to 810 right now because they don't want to hear about anything about next week playing against TCU, and they also don't want to hear anything about losing to Kansas. Just go to work today. You're the better team. You're at home. Have pride. It's senior day. That's the kind of thing he'd focus in on. He'll point to those seniors and go, these guys have been great leaders. Do you think there's any way in the world you want to send them off with a loss on senior day? That will be a focus of the team.
And we'll see how it plays out. It's a national TV game. Stan will have the call on the K-State Network, obviously. We'll check out some Big 12 other matchups and get ourselves set to roll through a great national scene. We're going to talk some rivalries still to come as well. All kinds of great stuff on this Saturday. It's kind of nice right now. Take advantage. I hope you're going around doing your errands and getting everything done so you can settle down in a nice, warm, cozy place with a little tryptophan aftermath from Thanksgiving and watch some football because it's going to be crappy outside in the evening. So we'll talk more college football and keep it sunny right here coming up next. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk a little other Big 12 right now, including games that obviously impact the national scene. And we'll run down the national scene in the next segment. And that's a sort of segue into talking rivalries in the last, maybe in a little bit more of an arcane way. I have a couple fun ideas for the roundtable with Todd Lebo. Stan will be on the road then. He's here now, which is great. He'll have the call on the K-State Network tonight. It's a national TV game, obviously. Stan, I don't know if you get enough. You get another coat for the game? You better make sure you bring another coat. It says it's going to dip into the 40s.
No, Danny.
Well, you have a closed press box.
Yes, it's like a studio. So I could wear shorts. It's great. You can suffer that, too. In August, late August. We said this earlier, but just a reminder to people, the college football playoff is trying to go to 12 teams. How soon they get it done, yet to be determined. But when it does happen, the college football schedule is going to change, and this weekend right here may be taken away for traditional rivalries. There may be no Michigan-Ohio State. They may move it up to the week before, and there's no Friday after Thanksgiving. Weekend. This is playoff weekend. So we're going to lose the Friday after Thanksgiving. If Mississippi State played on Thursday night, another great game. Mike Leach got a win over Kiffin. First time Mississippi State's gotten a win since Leach has been the coach there. This weekend, rivalry weekend, could be gone, and then we'll play literally in August. The first week will not be just week zero. Everybody will be playing in August. Point is, Danny, at K-State, it doesn't matter which it is. Our temperature is still like 72 degrees in there. We do not have an open window.
Yeah, I should remember that. I've covered many games there, and it's a little bit unfortunate. I mean, it's great when it's a cold weather day, but you really lose. I mean, it's antiseptic in there, kind of. I mean, those windows are good. I mean, from the standpoint
they are.
It isn't even noisy.
It is a really great discussion. I mean, that's talking about a round table. If it's an October day and the weather's beautiful and you can hear all the sounds of the band and everything else just coming into your booth.
You're mad.
With your headset on or not. Now, the thing that you have to factor in is once we put our headset on, we go outside.
Right.
So we can hear the band. And then you don't have to hear the band. And you don't have to have the wind blowing.
And you do such a great job in your broadcast, because one of my modern pet peeves, and this is probably a roundtable setting, is I think that a lot of times there's headsets involved and whatever, and these are real professionals, but my biggest modern pet peeve in sports broadcasting is a lot of times they'll have too much crowd noise, and you cannot hear the announcers very well. They want to have that good mix, and it's too much. I mean, too little is better than too much. I mean, too little is not good, but if you can't hear the announcers speaking clearly about the
radio,
game on radio, and you're listening, because we don't have, generally, we don't have headphones on. We're driving around in the car, whatever, and I listen to a lot of sports on the radio in my car. And anyway, let's move on
It's an interesting subject. I'll say this. The Chiefs have the most sophisticated system in place, that they're monitoring it so that they'll change the crowd noise depending on how loud it gets. So if there's a big play and Arrowhead goes crazy, in the normal setting that they're in at the start of the play, it would overwhelm Mitch's call. So they immediately got to bring it down to have the right mix, which is you better be able to hear the broadcaster.
Right.
You've got to be able to. But most people aren't changing it on the run during the play and don't have the sophistication. So if you're going to if you're just sitting there as a person setting it up and it's, game time, make sure you have less crowd noise so you can hear the announcers, even in the biggest plays.
And sometimes it's the announcer's fault. In tennis, for instance, I just can't believe they don't wait like 8 seconds after the point to start talking about the point, because the crowd's loud and they start talking about, well, it was a great back, and you can't hear them because the crowd's going nuts. But anyway.
And then they always settle down.
And so there's a side note there. Let's talk about some of the games here in the Big 12. And obviously the biggest one is Iowa State at TCU, because TCU, this isn't important for the Big 12. TCU is going to play in the Big 12 championship game unless they forfeit. So, but as far as the national playoff picture, TCU still is in the position. I don't think they can take it away from them if they win the two games. No matter whether they want to or not, they can't. So TCU wins the two, and they're in.
College football playoff.
The college football playoff. And Iowa State's been so feisty, but now they don't even have bowl eligibility to play for. Do they have that upset mentality in their final game? It's not senior day. It's on the road. Is TCU in any danger whatsoever in this game? They're only an 11-point favorite, which to me is a little bit of a surprise. Any danger factor in this game?
Wow, he asked me three questions, and I think I'm going to go yes, yes, yes to keep it simple. Iowa State's going to play their lights out, because when your season is over, this is when you love football more than ever. Crazy as it seems, when you have nothing to play for, but the joy of playing football, you play loose. Iowa State matches up well with TCU. They cause them havoc in their history. And it's so hard to finish it off. It's so hard when you're TCU and everyone says, all you've got to do, and you're playing in the college football playoff, is win these last two games. And, oh, by the way, the next one might be kind of hard, but it's in Dallas, 15 minutes from campus, which is really Arlington. 15 minutes from campus. It's closer to Fort Worth than Dallas, the AT&T Stadium is. So they got kind of two home games, but this is the easy one. Iowa State's in last place. Last place, 1-7. I think Iowa State will play focused. They'll play hard. Doesn't mean I predict that they're going to win, because my theory this year, Danny, that I've been talking to you about, is if you play good defense and other teams play elite offense, which teams win?
Offense.
Yes, you've been listening very closely like you always do. And TCU plays elite offense, like 39 points a game. And Iowa State plays really elite defense. It's kind of hidden. So I just think TCU will come out with the victory. But, yes, it could be close. Iowa State could be feisty. There could be some nervousness, or there could be overlooking things for TCU. And this game is important for the college football playoff, but it's also important for K-State fans who are listening to the show right now, if they're shopping or meandering over to Manhattan or just getting geared up for the game tonight. If K-State beats KU, they're going to go to the Big 12 championship game. If TCU wins today also, Danny, it almost guarantees that K-State goes to the Sugar Bowl. Because if you win over TCU in the Big 12 championship game, you're the highest-ranked team in the Big 12. You go to the Sugar Bowl. Got it? Pretty simple. But if TCU wins and goes to the college football playoff, those two games are not the Sugar Bowl. Out of the six, they rotate two each year. So K-State fits into the Sugar Bowl. So if TCU wins today and K-State wins today, K-State almost 100% is going to go to the Sugar Bowl and play an SEC team, which would be LSU, Tennessee, or Alabama. How much fun will that be? K-State's never played in the Sugar Bowl. Can you imagine the party in New Orleans on a game on December 31st if K-State fans are able to go? And if it's LSU, because K-State whipped LSU January 4th of 2022, and K-State won in an unbelievable basketball comeback the other night in the first ever meeting between K-State and LSU, LSU fans may not be so nice to K-State fans when they see him. They may actually think of him as a rivalry, like Mississippi or something. So this game does matter. I think TCU will win this ball game, Danny. But I do think that Iowa State has a lot to play for, and they are a feisty team.
West Virginia plays at Oklahoma State. West Virginia has lost any chance to be a bowl team. Oklahoma State has been limping down the stretch, literally and figuratively, and they put up a decent fight in, you know, the
second half
in their rivalry, and you know, at least showed some fight. Seems like that's got to be out the window. The motivations of this game, except for what you talked about,
West Virginia will play.
Okay,
and they got a new quarterback. You know, Green, that's his first start against K-State,
right?
And he had some success throwing. He's actually been a better runner. West Virginia has been awful on the road, so now we got that factor. Why don't we think they're going to be awful again at Oklahoma State? Well, yeah, I could buy into that. But that excitement level last game of the year, I think they'll play decently. And Oklahoma State's just a wounded wound. You know, if you've ever had an animal, like one of the legs just doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, they're trying.
Right.
They've got a great history. But they're not functioning on all cylinders. They have nothing to play for. But interestingly enough, as I look at the Big 12 standings, and I think this is incredible as we walk through this year, how many surprises we see. If Oklahoma State does not win, there will only be three teams that have a winning record in Big 12 conference play. With nine, you got to either be 5-4 or 4-5, right? Oklahoma State, if they win, and I do think they'll win, just for the record, I think they're going to have enough for West Virginia, but I think West Virginia will keep it interesting. Oklahoma State, if they finish 5-4, will be one of only four teams to have a winning record this year. And I think it's so interesting. We've got to comment on Baylor and Texas, because Texas has posted a 6-3 record. Okay, K-State is trying to go to 7-2. And get that second place by themselves and go to the Big 12 championship game. They'd be tie-breaked out if they lost. But how about Baylor? Picked first this year, won the Big 12 championship last year, beat Mississippi in the SEC championship game, have a returning starting quarterback, and it appears a coach with Dave Aranda that's just unique, different. How big a surprise is it to us that Baylor finishes 4-5 in a conference?
Big.
And 6-6. Kansas even if they lose today, finishes 6-6. Texas Tech has a chance to finish 6-6. So are we more surprised if Oklahoma finishing at 7-5 or 6-6 or Baylor? But both of those are giant surprises. TCU obviously was picked about, I think they were picked 7th in preseason, and they're going to win the conference. So we're all over the board here. Iowa State at the bottom, TCU at the top. No way. Texas finished about 3rd. Well, that's probably where I expected them to be. But Oklahoma State, I thought they would be so reliable. I thought Baylor, they would be the two teams that would be there for the Big 12 championship, trying to hold off the K-States and Texases of the world. Baylor finishes 6-6, Danny. That just shows you what kind of competition we've had. 4-5 in the conference. And old Texas Tech is saying, hey, if we can just win today against Oklahoma at home, we'll post a 5-4 conference record and be 7-5. That's, I haven't, I need to wait for you
and
to ask
would
me
be,
about
and
that
And it would
game.
Be a win over Oklahoma. We can do it in brief, too, which still carries some weight. So, and Oklahoma, each of these teams could guarantee a winning record. So there's something going on here as far as this is concerned. For Tech, it seems like they've really got some stuff to play for. There'd be a nice season, kind of pretty much guaranteed, a win over Oklahoma, a winning record in the league, a winning record period, a bowl game. That's pretty good work by them if they get it.
Remember when Patrick Mahomes was a Texas Tech quarterback and we didn't look at it closely enough when they'd light it up and score 50 points in a game? Wasn't it Baker Mayfield? Todd will be with us here soon on the roundtable, but Baker Mayfield against Patrick Mahomes, that's the kind of score we might see in this game because Oklahoma's offense can go, and Texas Tech doesn't care. They don't get down about that. So Red Raiders and Oklahoma, I'm not sure who's going to win this game, Danny, but I'm kind of going 59-57 or something. Texas Tech's going to be excited if they can win this game. And Oklahoma, I guess you say, at least they beat Oklahoma State. They're bowl eligible, but it would be a little bit of a shocker if Oklahoma ended the season 6-6.
No question about that. So, let's talk about a couple of the big national games, and we'll parlay that into talking about the rivalry games, which pepper the nation today. We'll talk about all that straight ahead on College Football Game Day, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Big day in college football, lots of things on the line, some of them tangible, some of them more intangible. We'll talk about those type of things with the rivalry aspect of it. But let's talk about the actual real football aspect of some of these important games. And no bigger, obviously, than Michigan-Ohio State at the Horseshoe. And this is, I think, the 5th time these teams have played as top 5 teams. I think there were only a handful of games where in the history of college football where both teams have won 11 games or 11-0 or better entering the game. Ohio State is a fairly solid favorite considering they're a 6-point favorite in this game. Winner, almost assured, well, gets to play in the Big Ten championship game against somebody they're really supposed to win. Loser has to hope for a wide variety of scenarios in order to make the college football playoff. It's hard to even imagine a college football game with more on the line than this one, on top of the fact that these two teams truly do hate each other.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. We have done this show for over 20 years, and we have to respect Alabama-Auburn as being a big, big deal. Because that state has no pro teams. They truly hate each other. I know people that move to that state, and literally the neighbors come over and just say, Alabama or Auburn? Welcome in Alabama or Auburn. And they're like, I'm from out of town. What are you talking about? And they go, you better pick a side because we'll decide if we're going to have dinner with you, you know, invite you over to the parties because it won't be any fun for you if you say Alabama and we're Auburn fans. And they played high-level football. Auburn's won national championship, et cetera. Obviously, Alabama's been dominant. But there's nothing that sticks like Ohio State, Michigan. I think I can say that. The more I think about it, where else, you know, there was a time Tennessee and Florida was a big deal. Okay, you know, but LSU and there's all small little time. Oklahoma versus Nebraska in the old days of the Big Eight was a giant.
I was going to bring that up because that game of the century is one of the only other games I can think of this late in the year that had that type of, well, they might have been 1-2.
1-2.
That year.
1971.
So, right. So, I mean, we don't see these type of matchups very often. I think most people do think Ohio State's better. As far as from a football standpoint, what do you think about this game? I'd say Ohio State, on balance, has not played as well as I think people maybe expected him to. They've had more battles in games than I think that people would have expected, rather than just playing out routing people every week.
Well, listening to the national narrative just can make you bog down and just want to throw your hands up, because this narrative about TCU having any debate if they go undefeated and not being a top four team just is ridiculous. But how bad is the Big Ten, just Big Ten football? It's not very good.
Right.
And guess what? I've watched Ohio State struggle in the wet conditions of the long grass of Northwestern. But there's every excuse in the world. The national pundits just...
Both teams last week were in peril, Michigan and Ohio State.
But no one acts like that ever happened.
Right. I know.
And this is not high-level competition that they're going against, Danny. You know, if you want to talk about some elite athletes and the struggles that you might run into in the SEC, I'll buy into that. The Big Ten this year, Danny, other than these two teams,
right,
are not that good. Who is the third best team that even makes you talk about it? Oh, Penn State?
Illinois, probably.
I mean, come on.
And they're just, you know, even shocked that they're any good.
So you asked what happens on the field. That's the appropriate thing to do. Ohio State's probably better than Michigan, but Ohio State's not anywhere near the Ohio States we've seen, the teams we've seen. Danny, it's not even close. This Ohio State team is not dominant, and that doesn't mean they can't be ranked number two in the country. Don't get me wrong. Who else are you going to rank? In a year where it is so even, who are the great teams? Maybe Georgia is again. Maybe they are, Danny. Maybe for the second year in a row they can prove it. But when I watch Ohio State play in some of the games that they've played in, even down the stretch here, they have been in struggling situations. They've not been dominant. And so this game is played with that ranking and that elite feel of college football playoff opportunity versus losing to your rival, number two versus number three. It deserves all the hype for the traditional purposes. But really, I don't think Ohio State or Michigan or either one of them are that great of teams compared to normal. So you got to give Ohio State the advantage being at home. Michigan has not been able to prove it in this game. You know, Jim Harbaugh has had a hard time beating Ohio State. So why would you think it'd be any different on the road today? I'm rooting for Michigan because I'd like to see him turn over the apple cart here and just quit thinking Ohio State's great because they're great, and I'd like to see a little more of the rivalry. If Michigan were able to win under Jim Harbaugh, wouldn't it be more interesting next year and the year after if we saw a little give and take here rather than Ohio State always winning? So I'm going to give Ohio State the advantage, but I don't think either one of these two teams are elite. I don't feel it at all. They're just good teams, just like TCU. They're good teams. Now, will they be able to ramp it up on a certain day, and will they have a lot of guys on NFL rosters 3 to 5 years from now? Yeah, I'll give you that. But to act like Ohio State has run through the conference, blown everybody out, and is way better, I don't get it. I don't think so. And I'm looking at the Big Ten standings here. Penn State is 9-2 on the year.
So they're probably the third best team.
That's what I think. They're the third best team and are not that good.
All right.
They're not that good. Big Ten is not that good this year, Danny.
I'm not going to say the name of it because I'm actually going to have some fun with the names of the games here in our round table. But Oregon and Oregon State play today. Oregon State's pretty good.
Yes, they are.
They're usually not very good at all in just about any sport, but their sports program, I think I heard them this referred to. This isn't the real name of it. This is like they're calling this now the cell phone game because I guess each of the big donors of each program owns cell phone companies or something like that. But anyway, Oregon State is at home. Oregon needs to win this game to make the big Pac-12 championship game. If they lose, Washington has to win, but if Washington wins, Washington beat Oregon, so they have the tiebreaker. USC is in. They're done. They're playing Notre Dame today in another rivalry game. So this is intriguing. The Pac-12 still certainly needs a whole lot of things to happen in order to, but Oregon probably would be a feistier opponent for USC than Washington, perhaps.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting things where USC is actually hoping for a harder opponent.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not how football coaches normally think, by the way. You know,
no.
Like when, do you think Ohio State and Michigan are upset that it might be Purdue in a championship game for the Big Ten? No, they're not upset at all. Like, give us the easiest team ever, right? I mean, that's what you root for. But USC, wanting some help, goes like, okay, bring on Oregon. We need someone who can come in with that flashy style and that respect around the country. While the Big Ten has not been playing good football, the Pac-12 has been playing a lot better.
Yeah, this has been a theme for you this year.
Yes, I mean, I thought Washington and Utah might be the best teams, and they're sitting there with Washington has two losses in the overall in the whole season, and Utah has three. But Oregon State, how about this, 8-3, a quiet team playing around the country. And if you look at conference realignment, they and Washington State are in the most peril of anybody in the whole country right now as things set. It could change on a dime, but if conference realignment continues to move and conferences have to face what's going forward, Oregon State and Washington State are in the least positive position of anybody right now. But this Washington State, this Oregon State team's 8-3, Danny. So I expect them to play well. I'm impressed with Oregon State, Utah, UCLA, Washington State, Washington, Oregon, and USC. That's a lot of teams in the Pac-12. This year they went away from divisions. It's going to be the top two teams that get to go. Oregon needs to win to be one of the top teams. USC does not have a conference game. This week they've got the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So USC's into the game next Friday night. But who will join them? Boy, it's going to be good. I have no prediction about how Oregon State's going to come out. But there's a lot at stake, because if Oregon State blows up Oregon and doesn't let them go to the championship game, that would be a lot of fun for Oregon State. And to finish 9-3 on the year? Whoa.
One other game I'm going to mention, just because they have a soft spot in my heart, and we'll talk more about these national games and rivalries coming up, is that today, after all the greatness and fun that they've had this year, Tennessee now has lost a couple of games. They play at Vanderbilt today. Vanderbilt can make a bowl game if they win the game. I don't think they have enough. They went in a very fluky fashion last week and got some defensive touchdowns and things of the like. But Tennessee, yeah, this is a rivalry game. I don't know if their fans are going to be fired up. They could half fill the stadium easy if they want to in Nashville. But they've got to be riding a little bit of disappointment right now. I think this is an intriguing rivalry game.
Yeah, and then Tennessee lost a quarterback, Hooker.
Right.
So they will overlook Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt is feisty. They've been playing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And if Vanderbilt wins, if no one thought that was possible 10 days ago, but South Carolina wiped out Tennessee. If Vanderbilt wins and finishes 6-6, Florida losing last night in another war. There have been some great games already this week. Thursday and Friday. Florida is 6-6. Missouri is 6-6. Vanderbilt could match them in overall record at 6-6. So it's incredible that Vanderbilt's bounced back. We were talking about how disappointed we were that they fought with Missouri. Remember, they had complete game control, 17-0,
right.
But Vanderbilt could have won.
Should have won, probably.
Yes, but how about Missouri beating Vanderbilt and Arkansas, when you could go back and replay the game and go, ooh, I think that they're going to lose this game at some point. Missouri's had their losses where they should have won, so it kind of evens out. But, yeah, I think Tennessee, again, is going to come out with you so much offense. It's going to, offense beats defense this year, so I would say Tennessee's going to win. But Vanderbilt's playing a surprising football, and Tennessee could not be more different in the feeling around their program than it was 10 days ago than anybody in the country, because they thought they were on their way to a national championship. Now they lost a quarterback, blew out his knee, and got ripped by South Carolina. They'll be half asleep today against Vanderbilt.
That is Stan Weber. I don't know. Maybe I can coax him to stay here, because Todd Lebo's here. Stan's supposed to hit the road. I don't know. It's only 20 minutes, Stan. We'll go to break on that note and see if Stan Weber will be here or by cellular phone. Coming up next here on College Football Game Day. Well, Stan Weber decided to stay, and I'm just going to poke Stan a little bit, because Todd Lebo's here. He just put the soccer game up there.
Who did? Did Todd do that?
Todd did that. Yeah, we know you didn't, because Stan was asking me for a little U.S. World Cup update. And so he said, in 30 seconds, tell me, blah, blah, blah. And he said, so the U.S. drew against England. I said, and I started to say, yeah, they played it pretty well. He goes, I don't care about that. Yeah. Just tell me what the result was. I don't give a rip.
Was the game tied?
It was tied, yes. It was an exciting nil-nil,
though. Like
the Colts, like
the, just like the Colts and Texans this year in your National Football League, there was a tie game, Stan.
We talk about analytics, and my wife will play along. If she walked in right now, I'd say, hey, Nancy, if it's fourth down and one, what should we do? And she go, look at the book. And I said, okay, what does the book say? She says, go for it.
Well, not that's if, exactly not if Sam Pittman.
That's what analytics, modern analytics are. So that's my soccer story as well. All I get is walk in and say,
what's the result?
The result, it was a tie, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the result
every
is
game,
this.
Every soccer game, I walk in and go, it was a tie, wasn't it?
The result is this.
And was it
the tie
nil,
will
nil?
Not work on Tuesday. They need to beat Iran on Tuesday.
Yeah, I went through the whole thing with
yeah.
him.
Yeah,
I did win. I did give him
more soccer than I needed today. This is football season.
Yeah, exactly. So let's turn to football. And I'm going to start out with a simple one. This is going to be rivalry-centric here, and we'll do a little bit from a football standpoint, a little bit just. I was thinking today, the biggest football game of the day, without question, is Ohio State and Michigan. I don't have any real affection for this game. As good as it's been through the years, the teams are usually fairly similar. I guess Ohio State's been better through the years traditionally. I don't know.
Won this game in recent years,
but there was a
stretch of like 14 years where they won one and tied one. Michigan owned them.
Right. So
the pendulum swung both ways,
right.
But too far.
Yeah. But both teams.
Is it because
been,
the games? Here's the question: is it because the games are all on TV? We used to love this game when Woody and Bo were
even
there.
I don't know what it was. It was maybe the maybe because it was cold, or I didn't have a rooting interest because I didn't either really like or really dislike either team.
I'll say that growing up, my whole life, I watched the game, but I didn't care who won.
Right, so maybe
that's not right. You want to dislike one of the teams. Todd, did you like either Michigan or Ohio State?
No, I didn't like either one of them. Yeah, I had some friends who liked Michigan, so I kind of really
So you don't really care
sometime.
Who wins each time they play.
And today, the stakes in this are huge because if you win, you have an inside track for the college football playoff. But if you don't get beat bad, you probably are still kind of okay-ish for the college football playoff.
Oh, what a joke.
But it's what's happening this year because people have not held up their end of the bargain. We talked about this. You know what's going to happen next Saturday. TCU is not going to win their not last two games. They should win today. They're playing at home, but they're playing Iowa State, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would
right.
you be surprised if they scored 20 points today and somehow found themselves in a dogfight?
Iowa State will play energized, and therefore I think it'll be a fight.
Yeah, so... and then we've got USC and Notre Dame tonight. Notre Dame's playing great. USC could get kind of eliminated here. Now, they still have to win another one. I mean, there's all kinds of things can happen with teams losing. So whoever loses this game, this is almost like, your Alabama years where you don't make the title game and you just get to sit and watch because you've got such a resume built in. But, no, I agree with you, Danny. This game for me, I know it's huge. The numbers today are going to be monstrous.
Right, because they're big markets.
Because they have huge alumni bases and they care. It doesn't.
And 11 o'clock kickoffs have turned into a ratings bonanza.
And
absolutely.
I don't think people understand either. Ohio doesn't really, I mean, they don't have a monstrously large city, but they have
a lot of people.
But they have like eight really big cities.
Yeah,
like
the
Cleveland, Dayton, Columbus is a real big city. People think of it as a college town, maybe. It's a big city. So anyway, yes, the ratings will be great. So,
I'm looking forward to the game, by the way.
Yes, from today, from a football standpoint, I am looking forward to the game. But I was trying to think of what my favorite, now we can leave our local ones out. Obviously, I think for most people, Kansas, Missouri, when they played, that was a great one. And Kansas State, but now it's been non-competitive. Nationally, I would guess that I have to lean towards a favorite rivalry game, Auburn-Alabama, just because I'm always probably going to root for Auburn, I guess. But, USC-Notre Dame, I used to have some affection for because I couldn't stand Notre Dame ever, and that's not a popular Notre Dame football. Because where I grew up in Boston, there was a fine Catholic institution there
that
nobody rooted for. They all rooted for Notre Dame because everybody was Catholic there. And I'm like, why do you like Notre Dame? Just because you're Catholic? That's it? Well, Boston College is right
New
over
there. New Rockne made Notre
College
Dame
is right over
nationally.
There. So I always used to root for USC. So, Todd, starting with you, outside of a personal one like, obviously Bedlam, have you got a game that kind of scratches your itch through the years?
it just goes in cycles, I think. I mean, obviously, Oklahoma-Nebraska used to be a monster because it meant something at the end of the year. It was the game that usually decided the
Was
big
it
eight.
Bigger than Oklahoma-Texas in your world?
Yeah, because back then, it was the league
at
game.
At its best, yeah.
It was a league game. Oklahoma-Texas has been huge just personally for me, and it kind of, you know, until recent years when Texas really fell off, if you won that game, you had the inside track to make the title game and do all those things. But outside of our league games, I do like Auburn-Alabama because even when Auburn stinks, they sometimes find a way to fight. Like last year, right. They probably could have won, and it's come down to the end. But I was looking through the games today. I'm like, well, this game didn't really matter. It's so weird that this doesn't They're playing today, and it matters, but it doesn't really matter because—
It is so hard to remember they're even playing today.
Yeah, because it's just kind of—
They're playing today.
Yeah, today. It's big.
Alabama-Auburn.
It's big, and I was texting with our buddy Shane Summers this morning. You know, that was a really fun game last night, Florida and Florida State.
Oh, it's great.
Who even knew it was happening? Because it doesn't really matter. Florida, by the way, they're paying $7 million to Billy Napier, 6-6. You know, I mean, so there's a lot of little disappointment with your high-priced head coaches in year one.
Brent Venables, if he loses today at Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Do you have any concern at all about Texas Tech? I know you're going to be—
absolutely.
Last week, you knew you were going to be at Oklahoma State. Congratulations.
Who has rolled through in Lubbock other than Baylor when they were +5 in turnovers?
Right. Tech's been a tough place.
All right,
to
let's
play.
Get back to this rivalry
place.
Thing. Let's get focused.
I think that's probably the one, Auburn and Alabama, because it happens late. I do think some of the SEC rivalries are fun, but they're not the end
you're
of the
not
year
into
ones
Georgia,
are better.
Florida.
They're the end of the year is better for me.
So you're not into Georgia, Florida.
It's fine, but it's first week of November.
It's been a tradition for a long time.
All These last week ones, I think Oregon State's been a fun one, but at least it's happening during the day today. Sometimes that's at 9:30 at night, like the Apple Cup tonight is late. I will not be awake for
USC,
the end of that.
UCLA.
It's fine.
You know what
game.
I liked about that game, Danny? Back in the day, they both wore their dark jerseys.
They had them on last week. They both had the dark on. It looked good.
Because
that was a good one.
L.A. Coliseum.
But UCLA has usually never been good. They were both good when I was really young. There was a big game back in the 60s when they were both very highly ranked. Gary Beben and Pat Hayden. There you go, dating myself there.
Lynn
so
Swan.
Todd did one. He said Apple Cup. I'm going to go through some of these.
Okay, here
and
we
if
go.
They even have a name or if you can get it, and we have to go one at a because personal, go back and forth. And Michigan Ohio State, I don't think has a name, does it?
No, I don't think so.
Which seems a little bit weird to me. Georgia Tech, no name there, I don't think.
It may, but I don't know.
And I don't think so. South Carolina Clemson, do we have a name? I don't think so.
It may have a name.
Louisville, Kentucky, I don't know. Iron Bowl is Auburn
Iron
and
Bowl,
Alabama.
Yeah.
And I didn't even ask you, Stan, because I figured you'd get it. Oregon State, Stan. This one.
Oh, you do know it?
Yeah, well, he knows it, but he just did one. So, I mean, this is yours, Stan.
Well, I don't think I have a good guess because you said a cell phone, and I don't get that because Nike, I keep thinking about.
I don't know.
It's the uncivil war.
No, it's the it's the civil war. But
I think they call it the uncivil war.
I think,
I'm not sure which one of you guys agree on that.
Well, one of the states was free and one of the states was a slave state. Back in the day, or territories were
wherever,
designated like that.
Was,
yes. So anyway,
we do know a little bit about that around here.
Yeah. So Michigan and Penn State is a concocted rivalry. Utah and Colorado, I think, might have a.
It's called the newbies. We're the new guys in the league.
Notre Dame USC does not have a name.
They play for the Golden Shillelagh, though, don't they? I think there's
is that right?
They play for a trophy of some
they
sort.
They do?
I believe so.
Tennessee and Vanderbilt, don't think so, but maybe it's a
I know
the guitar
get to
game
the Big
or
Ten,
something.
We got a good one.
Yeah, the Big Ten, I actually brought up the Big Ten because they have so many of them.
Iowa State, Minnesota.
Okay, Minnesota and Wisconsin today, Todd.
Minnesota, Wisconsin is Paul
Bunyan's axe. He got it. There you go. Let's see. During the season, Illinois and Northwestern, even though it's a rivalry and it's an important game today, Illinois still has a backwards way of getting into the championship game.
How does that work? They're going to finish in four
loses.
What's that game called?
Purdue's playing
for the
Indiana.
For the old
Oaken bucket.
That's right.
And Michigan.
So if Purdue wins, they get to play the winner of Ohio State, Michigan next week. But if Purdue loses and Illinois wins,
that's a four-way tie.
Illinois goes back up.
And if Illinois and Purdue lose, Iowa backs in, and my friend will go to Indianapolis, and I'll have to figure out a different way to see him in Boston. So there we go. So there's some of the rivalries. I'm trying to think of any others that, but the Big Ten has some others that have names.
Oh yeah,
Iowa, Rosedale, and that's Iowa, Minnesota, right?
It's a Big Ten tradition for those games.
I like when they have names. You know, even Bedlam. How long has it been Bedlam?
Ever since I can remember.
Right. So yeah. that's not a new thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's been there forever. This is called...
Did you watch the second half of Bedlam last week,
Todd? Hard. Yes, I did.
Because you guys are so far ahead. I just wondered if you said champagne bottles and...
I watched it. They tried their best. It's called the Jeweled Shillelagh. Is awarded for the Notre Dame USC since 1952. They also have a Shillelagh trophy for Northwestern Notre Dame, and then they have a Shillelagh trophy for Notre Dame Purdue. They don't play every year, though, so the USC win is the Jeweled Shillelagh.
Didn't Lynn Dawson at Purdue beat Notre Dame?
Probably.
Danny, you were probably rooting against Notre Dame back then.
I think Lynn Dawson, no matter what game it is, ever. Even when they showed the replays on Sunday, I was rooting against him.
So, was that the greatest thing ever, though? Todd, were you alive when that occurred? You're too young, maybe.
With Lynn Dawson in college?
No, Notre Dame football. Where it was only one game a day on Saturday.
Yeah,
and on Sunday morning,
they showed the whole game.
They would show the whole game, but they would say, because the drives would take forever, they ran the football. So they'd see Notre Dame get the ball at the 30, and you'd see them get a first down at the 42, and then at the 40, and they'd say, moving to further action in the same drive. And then now they'd be at the 30-yard line going in and 4 minutes off the clock.
So yeah. I'm going to ask you a question.
But they used to do that. By the way, when I first went to college on Sunday nights late, and they did this for Oklahoma too, I think I watched both of them on Sunday nights. They would show each team's entire game with the coach there.
When I was in college, Oklahoma was on probation, so they had to do it that way for a year because it couldn't be on live TV. It's a different story. I can ask you an announcer question, Stan.
Okay.
You were just down in the Grand Cayman.
Yes.
Congratulations to K-State for winning that.
Nice wins.
You traveled back yesterday. You're here in plenty of time for the Sunflower Showdown. Now, do you know if our good friend Brian Haney, who called the game last night in the Bahamas, is going to make it back for this?
No, he didn't. He didn't call the game last night.
Oh, he didn't call last night?
I don't know who. I should know, but I didn't. I don't know who it was.
Landry is in town.
So he came back early because he was on.
Went to Joe's Kansas City, Todd, and when I was driving back, I listened to Kansas, Tennessee, and it did not sound like Brian Haney.
It was not Brian Haney.
So I think he went down there for the first game.
Somebody texted me who it was. He was good. He did a good job.
All right,
I don't know who it was.
This is an important game tonight. This is when I think about Thanksgiving basketball tournaments. I think that's a lot of fun, but I always think about you guys because you got to make sure you get back because this is as big a Sunflower Showdown as there's been.
Can I tell you an announcer story? Kind of how? Well, football always rules. We don't get to go to these tournaments very often. They have to just fit perfectly in, or we
don't
miss
the
basketball. So, my first time to go to something like a Grand Cayman Islands. I've been to Maui for tournaments. I've been to Hawaii for tournaments, but this is the first time where I was able to go someplace like Grand Cayman. It worked perfectly. I left West Virginia, went to Pittsburgh that night, slept hardly at all, and then went to Miami on to Grand Cayman. But we were also down there with Tulane. Tulane's play-by-play announcer, good guy. We kind of know him because K-State played Tulane.
Right.
They were in the airport in the Grand Cayman with us, and we were on charter flights, both of us. The charter flights were delayed because just getting the planes from the U.S. over and are you going to fly over Cuba and some real-life stuff is out there.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking to them, and they're going like, our charter is delayed. Our charter is delayed such that they were going to ride their charter back to New Orleans, catch a commercial flight out on Thanksgiving so that they could get to Cincinnati. They kicked off at 11 o'clock, Cincinnati versus Tulane in a big game, and they go, we cannot take our charter because it's going to land too late. We can't fly out of New Orleans. So they were scrambling around getting commercial flights, hoping to get there. I assume they got there for Tulane's win yesterday. So Tulane is in a championship game, beat a ranked team on the road against Cincinnati. But that was real life. We had an extra day. We were maneuvering on Thursday with some delays. We were able to make
My
it.
My guess is if your tournament wasn't going to end until Thursday, maybe Stan would have begged out of that when you would have just hung around here.
Yes. Yes.
We don't miss football games. This will be my 439th straight K-State football games since 1987.
While we have 2 seconds, I want to say congratulations to Garrett Bowl. He's wrapping his career up in your booth, right?
I complimented his mix earlier because it is a pet peeve of mine when the crowd noise is too big. K-State
Frank
announcers
Bowl's son,
always sound so
is
great.
In our booth almost all the time for many years now, like 15 years.
He's retiring this year.
Yes,
his kids are
but I can't figure out when his last game is because
I don't know.
It might be next week. So hey, Garrett,
this
congratulations!
Is the last one
he's done a good job.
This will be the last.
How about that?
Here we go. We want to do a couple more things. By the way, I'll just give you the top 10 according to somebody of the showdown: Rocky Mountain Showdowns, Colorado State, Apple Cup, as mentioned, Washington State, Duel in the Desert. Arizona State. I'm not buying
that.
Top 10? The big game is California Stanford. Iron Bowl. The game is Harvard Yale. You've been to that.
I've been to that.
Egg Bowl is we talked about Mississippi.
Egg Bowl was thrilling on Thanksgiving.
It was a good one. Red River Shootout. Clean old fashioned hate. That's Georgia Tech.
There you go.
I didn't know
today.
Clean old-fashioned hate. Woo.
Wow.
Civil War, number two, and they rank number one. Bedlam. How about that?
That's a good one.
Yeah,
anyway. It's been there for a long time.
All right, so just from...
And Oklahoma, Nebraska didn't have a name, right?
No,
not that I've ever heard of.
Okay. It's called the Big Eight Championship.
Yeah, right. So just before we wrap things up, let's do a football thing again. Nebraska names Matt Rhule their head coach, and Nebraska... Down for a long time, went to a favorite son. That didn't work. A lot of things haven't worked for them. I kind of get the feeling this might work.
I think this is a solid hire. It's very solid hire. I think Matt Rhule's a very good coach. What we haven't seen Matt Rhule do is stay somewhere for like 5 or 6 or 8 years to really do something. He turned Temple into a double-digit winner. He took Baylor over after the really bad year, but went 1-11 in year one, got him to 11 wins, and then bolted to the NFL. So you took that payday and you did all that stuff. He's not a Midwestern guy or whatever, but he's a very good coach. I think this is a very solid hire, but I still think no matter who's coaching Nebraska, they're never going to be what they were in the mid-90s. So people who were thinking they're just going to dominate everyone and win all their games by 50 points, it's not happening. But I think this is it's a good step. But I thought Scott Frost was a home run, so...
Stan, I think that this does have the potential, because I think Matt Rhule did look like a very good college football coach of replicating. I'm not saying he's going to be Alabama and Nick Saban, but one of these coaches who, for whatever reason, they just didn't have a fit or it just didn't work out. Sometimes it's just, you know, you don't have the team or whatever in the pros and then comes back and is just fine in college.
I think it's a very solid hire, and I can't imagine who a next best choice would have been.
Lance Leipold, who parlayed it into
two
extensions in 1 year. I don't know. That might be a record.
It's pretty good.
That might be a record.
Matt Rhule's college resume is very good.
Especially at Temple.
Mm-hmm.
He built them to a program.
And with
at
pros,
Baylor, he popped.
You know?
So, no, it's a good hire for them, but it's easy to go with your other statement. They're not Nebraska like they used to be. Just because you have a lot of fans and your only game in town in their state, that's not going to carry the day. They're just another Big Ten team. But getting back to bowl games are a big deal. I mean, they've had a drought, and it's gone through.
It's a drought.
It's really a drought.
It's a drought.
So this will be, if you just were, forget the name Nebraska, if you just said there's a team that hasn't been to a bowl game or had winning records for 5 or 6 years, and they get Matt Rhule as a coach,
good deal.
They got a good crowd, and good backing, and plenty of money, you'd say, I feel good about this team.
Hey, listen, if
I do feel good about that, but
if Lance Leipold left, and KU hired Matt Rhule, it'd be a great hire.
Right.
You know, think about that. So he's a really good coach.
But for Nebraska fans to think, hey, this is going to be the one, probably.
Well, there's no one.
There's no
silver bullet out there.
Nope.
To do
you
that.
Know, hey, if they post some 7-5s and 8-4s in the next 2 or 3 years, take it and be very happy. Anybody who wins 8 games in college football right now ought to be happy, unless you're Ohio State, Michigan, or Alabama.
You'd like to be able to think you could raise your head up in that division. We're talking about that, right? They could have a 4-way tie at 4-4.
They could win the division next year.
You know, and go after it.
Because who else is good in the division? You really going to count on Illinois?
Nope.
Purdue? Maybe Iowa?
It's a great day of college football for me.
Good to
see you,
Todd.
That's college football game day for the year. These guys will be back next week on Championship Week, and we've got the big game of the day, to say the least, Ohio State and Michigan, followed by day-long coverage of Kansas and Kansas State. What a great day of college football. All yours on Sports Radio 810 WHB.